Good morning. This is Bill Corbett from Riff Tracks and Mystery Science Theater 3000, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
August 15th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am Horace, riding my chariot across the sky.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Yeah, this week you've got sun problems. There's your problem right there.
The sun problems.
You got sun problems.
My chariot. My understanding is there's going to be somebody in between me.
Black hole
and
sun,
the earth.
Won't you come? But before that happens, today is the first day of school. So I'm ready. I got a cup of coffee.
The first day of school?
Yeah.
And the world ends?
Right after. Yeah. they are definitely not related, kids.
Here in the Chicago area, the world ends about, I'm sorry, Chicago area, Southern Illinois area, it ends what about noon?
You're going down to Southern Illinois? That's your plan?
That's my plan.
All right. I'm going down to St. Louis.
Well, is that Southern Illinois?
Yes, very Southern Illinois.
It may be on the Missouri side, but it is that area.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see a really good movie. You got to see Dunkirk. Tell me all about this movie.
Well, the first thing we need to know, it's a Christopher Nolan movie.
Written and directed by Chris Nolan.
So when we know that, yeah. there is a way things unfold,
There's
Steve.
An expectation There's based on the director and a writer, and you know what you're getting into when you go to Chris Nolan, yeah.
And there is a, the way they use the camera, the mm-hmm. filter of it, and Nolan is a master.
I agree.
He is truly a special, special director. And if this is a story that needs to be told, basically it's a story where the military, English military, was inside of city, and they were continually being pressed in a smaller section. So basically we've got about 450,000 troops that are on a beach.
That's a huge number.
That need to get across the English Channel back to England.
Mm-hmm.
And the Navy's trying to get there, and they can't get there. So what ends up happening is Winston Churchill needs these troops back. So he's expecting, I think it was 30,000. So think about that. There's 450,000.
Uh-huh.
And he needs at least 30,000.
He believes he can successfully rescue 30,000 of these troops.
So they really are sitting ducks. So yeah. Airplanes are flying over, dropping bombs on them. And one of the things I want to point out, Saving Private Ryan, it starts off and there's a scene, the invasion of Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly, when I say violent,
yeah,
you know, there are people being blown up. It's intense. There's all this other stuff.
A lot of people say that is the most accurate portrayal of war that's ever been on film.
All right, so Christopher Nolan is this is a different scene,
mm-hmm.
but Christopher Nolan's got this too. But what we get that's really different about this is we're not necessarily seeing dead, but we're not seeing blood. We're not seeing gore.
Okay,
you know, when I talked about Mel Gibson's Hashal Riggs a few weeks ago, I talked a little bit about Hamburger. And when you see a Mel Gibson film, there really is a grotesqueness to the intensity. And he means that. He wants to shock your mind
mm-hmm.
to recognize that this is not natural. Christopher Nolan puts you in that in the same type of position, but what you're seeing is the story there is the intensity. It is the absolute stress that you're going under. And what we have in this movie is three different stories going on. We have a naval story where the Navy is trying to get to the beach to be able to get these people, the wounded and the soldiers, load them up and get them back to England. That's not happening. The Germans are blowing up the boats. It just continuously having some real challenges. We also have a aircraft story, the Air Force, the Royal Air Force, and we get their story. And we recognize from watching this how the Air Force has changed warfare,
mm-hmm.
you know, from a two-dimensional plane to now we have a third dimension. I mean, it really is. it's so innovative and so destructive at the same time. And then we've got our third part of our story, which is civilian boats, the small boats that were sent over. These were volunteers. Their boats were going over, and they were going to rescue these people. And these stories get very intense. Eventually, they all come together. So they're going on at different times. You get it from the soldier's standpoint on the beach. You get it from an officer's standpoint for the naval and just waiting for this stuff to happen. You get it from the people who are on the ships, the people who are on the boats coming over, difference between the naval ships and the boats, mm-hmm. and the people in the Air Force. Truly, truly, I can't say enjoyable. It is an experience I'm glad I went through.
The intensity of it was real enough so that you could sit in the movie theater safe and sound and feel that desperation, feel those emotions from those characters.
Absolutely. And you really are. If you're a soldier out there, mm-hmm. you're sitting duck out there. And there's a part at the, I'm not giving away everything. This story is well known. There's a part where a gentleman who's gone through it, he's an officer, says, no, I'm going to stay here. I'm waiting for the French because we're going to have to do the same to them. So, you know, you get this idea of duty. You get this idea of having to work on something that's above what you would normally work on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you don't work for the betterment of mankind. We all do. But there are times when stuff like this happens and you have to make decisions and they're not pretty. They're casualties to this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where they have to rescue a person, and the captain of the boat says he's the person they rescue is in shell shock.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it helps you understand a little bit about what happens to these soldiers when they come back from Afghanistan and when they come back from the Iraq area. Any type of mission, you know, they're put in incredible stress. They have to make decisions, and then they're asked to assimilate after experiencing all this. Anyway, fantastic movie. I recommend this. This is on a scale 1 to 100. I would say 80, 85,
wow.
90, maybe.
That's good. A 90. You go as high as a 90. That's impressive from you.
Well, this is a fun movie. This is a very interesting movie. I sat next to a gentleman with his son. His son was probably 12. And they were going to go experience this together. So I don't know if he had a military background mm-hmm. or not. You don't have to have a military background to get what the story's about. But I think what you'll get from this is how these people come back. I'm sorry, they go into war as boys mm-hmm. with the idea of adventure. And they come back just absolutely worn.
Mm-hmm.
They're a totally different person, and you understand why people don't like war.
Yeah.
Anyway, soldiers. Anyway, worthy to do it. Did you see anything, Steve?
Yeah, I got a chance to see Get Out. This is the Jordan Peele written and directed movie. Jordan Peele, you might know from the comedy duo of Key and Peele, which has disbanded and they've gone their separate ways. And Jordan has become a director
now
on this one.
This movie looks like a horror movie.
It does.
For the advertisement.
Yes, the advertisement really scared me away from this movie. I looked at this movie so many times and went, I can't watch this movie. I can't watch this movie in the dark. I can't watch this movie alone. So we rented it. My wife and I sat down last night before sunset and watched this movie just in case it was too scary for us. This is not a horror movie, it turns out. This is a really good psychological thriller. This is a good episode of The Twilight Zone.
So this is a black man
mm-hmm.
and his white girlfriend.
That's right.
Going to visit the parents.
Her parents. And, you know, there's all the tension of, did you tell your parents that I am of a different race? Because this is going to be an issue. If I'm going to this very different area where I feel like a fish out of water, I feel like a sore thumb, that phrase is actually used in this. I stick out like a sore thumb. If I'm going to go into this lion's den, you're going to warn them first, right? And she goes, no. This is not an issue. There's no issue here. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. They're good people. They'll be fine too. And then he gets there. And there is something mysterious and weird going on around this house. There are other black people who are acting very suspiciously.
All right. So this movie is a movie that I want to see.
You should see this one. You would like this one.
Okay.
Because you like The Twilight Zone.
I do.
This is, if you told me M. Night Shyamalan wrote this, I would go, oh, I know what's going to happen. But he didn't. Jordan Peele wrote this and directed it, so I didn't know what was going to happen. And it was an enjoyable surprise, and boy, it was scary without being a horror movie. I was so glad it wasn't a horror movie. I don't watch horror movies. I just don't.
All right. Well, this one you can get streaming or you can get on disc.
Yeah.
And it was released earlier this year.
That's right. Opening this week, we've got a lot of really interesting conceptual sort of filmmaking happening, including you and I are going to the theater on Thursday, August 17th, and we are going to see Riff Tracks live. They're doing a Doctor Who episode for Riff Tracks, Chip.
That makes Steve very excited.
Okay. You would think that I would be very excited because there's a Doctor Who episode in a movie theater and there's a Riff Tracks live going on at the same time. But they're doing the Five Doctors, Chip.
Well, for Steve, that means a lot. For me, it doesn't mean very much at all.
This is the 20th anniversary episode of Doctor Who, created in 1983, 20 years after Doctor Who. And
a lot of people love Doctor Who, Steve being one of those.
This episode is a beloved episode. This is the Five Doctors that features five of the different actors who played the Doctor up until that point.
Now, if you're locally in our area, you can inbox us. You're welcome to go with us.
Yes, come on, let's go.
It's a Fathom event, so if you're not in our area, just look in on fathomevents.com, find out where it's playing locally for you. I'm sure, because it's Doctor Who,
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of people there.
There's going to be a lot of costumes. Going to be a lot of scarves. Going to be a lot of hats. Going to be a lot of nerds.
It could be.
I'm ready.
Let's go.
I'm so trepidatious about them making fun of something that I love, Chip. I'm so scared.
And I am not.
I know. Yeah, you're gonna have fun watching this one. Also, coming this week, we're finally going to get The Defenders on
Friday.
Netflix.
Yeah. All right, so The Defenders, if you remember, we've had two seasons of Daredevil. We've had a season of Jessica Jones, a season of Luke Cage,
yeah,
and a season of Iron Fist.
Uh-huh.
And all of these shows are going to all come together.
They're all
going to
assemble, and like the Avengers, only different.
That's right. the street level, and Sigourney Weaver is going to be our bad guy.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
Zool.
You never know. You never know. She may have a cat with her.
A lot of smoking in space.
A lot of smoking in space.
The Defenders, I have high expectations for this. Looking at what Marvel has done, making this Netflix series, all of these series, funneling into this one thing called The Defenders. I have high expectations.
This should be a lot of fun. And they've already planned The Punisher's coming out later on.
Mm-hmm.
We've got another season of Daredevil. We have another season of Luke Cage. And another season of Jessica Jones. And I'm not sure. I think they may have announced another season of Iron Fist.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, this is going to come back as another season of Defenders at some point.
There you go. Also on Netflix, we've got a movie called What Happened to Monday. This is a very interesting, very weird sci-fi dystopia.
Exactly. It sounds like, you know, if you have Netflix to watch The Defenders, at some point you have to take a break.
Yeah.
And this is about overpopulation and about the weird stuff that can happen with it.
The future.
Woohoo.
Where if you have more than one child, you're not allowed to have more than one child. And what happens if you have twins? Or, in this movie, what happens when you have identical septuplets? You name each of them for days of the week, and then they are only allowed to leave their safe house on their day of the week.
Ooh.
And live one life as seven different people.
Well, there you go. That should be fun. All right, we got some movies at the movie theater, Mr. Steve.
Oh, here's your fun movie. You want to have some fun? You want to see some characters who like to say the F word a lot? Go see The Hitman's Bodyguard. This is Ryan Reynolds and Samuel Jackson, two men who have been in so many great movies, are great character actors, and like to say the F word a lot.
There you go. Well, it should be a lot of fun. It looks like it's meant to be lighthearted
yeah.
with action.
It's an action adventure. It's these two actors. action-adventure superstars teaming up together, and I hope it's good.
What if you were Daniel Craig and you decided to dye your hair white?
Oh, Daniel Craig. Okay, here's the pitch. Take Daniel Craig, put him in the back of a car with a southern accent and an effeminate drawl, and... make him the bad guy who's not really the bad guy. This is called Logan Lucky. It is, those of you who have seen the commercials or the trailer, this one looks like a lot of fun.
It has Channing Tatum in it, so my wife already wants to go see right. it. And then you throw in NASCAR with a heist. I mean, what can you say?
A heist film with Daniel Craig, Channing Tatum, and NASCAR?
In North Carolina.
Really? This movie was made for you and your family, Chip.
All right. What if we were going to do a little bit of rapping, Steve?
Well, what if we were of a very American sort of story about making it in this world, finding that way that we are special? We could find this movie. It's called Patty Cakes.
With a dollar sign.
With a dollar sign in the S. This trailer is great. I really have high expectations for this one, too. It's a story of a woman who is finding her way in life.
In fact, all the young people who are kind of finding their way in life, and they don't seem to, you know, the things that they have to do, the jobs they take, certainly are not what they're dreaming about. But, you know, being able to make their way out of their circumstances to what they really want to do.
Yeah, this seems like a great American story.
In fact, a lot of these movies we're going to be discussing real quick are going to be things you're going to watch in the fall. You may not see them at the theater, but streaming or something, these you're going to catch almost all of these.
Yeah, this is a list of movies that you might have a really hard time finding in your theaters this week, but you're going to see these streaming for the next few months. The next one especially, this one's called Marjorie Prime, and again, you're going to have a hard time finding it in the theater. This is a really interesting, small, little sci-fi story.
Now, this is a play
that used to be a play
that has been showing.
Uh-huh.
And they have made a film about this play.
Yes, with an all-star cast.
Yes, they do. They have Gina Davis in it.
John Hamm is featured as the main character, along with Lois Smith, and there's a Tim Robbins in there too. This is quite possibly a really good episode of The Twilight Zone right here.
All right, so let's give the pitch on this.
Uh-huh.
A service that provides holographic recreations of a deceased loved one
uh-huh.
allows a man to come face-to-face with his younger version of his late father-in-law.
That's amazing. I love the idea of when someone is deceased, we have memories of them. And in this computer age, we can have way more than just memories. Add 100 years to this, and we might have holographic representations of these loved ones.
Well, Steve, you could haunt your children forever.
Uh-huh. That's why we do a podcast.
Or parents can do the same to you.
That's right. But you can always turn it off. That's the nice part. All this video that's on YouTube, you can go in and look at it, or you can not look at it.
That's not the only Twilight Zone type movie coming out, Steve.
You're right. There is one called Dave Made a Maze.
So a number of years ago, Being John Malkovich uh-huh. came out, you were inside the body and mind of John Malkovich. It was a really strange movie. It was a great fun
Spike
play.
Jones. Yeah, that was great.
Steve, this looks similar.
This is very similar. A man creates a maze out of cardboard boxes in his apartment, and a group of people enter the maze and find out that it's bigger on the inside.
And maybe they're lost.
Bigger on the inside, Chip.
Okay.
That's a Doctor Who reference, Chip.
I should probably remember
that. You should watch Doctor Who once in a while. This looks great. There's puppetry going on in this, so I was sold from the moment that I saw this trailer.
It's kind of an independent, fun play. And I think, and it's just an exploration of being creative. I think this will be a fun type of movie. And then we have the next one, which the trailer doesn't really give us a lot about, does it?
No, this one called Liza, Skies Are Gray. The trailer is very dark and very nonverbal, but the reviews seem to point to this being like a Romeo and Juliet road trip kind of movie.
Set in the 60s, set in California.
All right.
You've got yourself a nice little setting right there,
uh-huh.
But we don't really get a lot from the trailer. So once again, This may be a movie that we're going to catch streaming at some point this fall. It's going to be out. If you're at some art house, maybe this is the place to see it.
Yeah, this is not the week for going to the movie theater for me, that's for sure. So these movies, now we have a list of what we're going to see for the next 2-3 months.
Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week, and you know, it's the 21st century.
Brains.
Anything could happen.
Brains.
We've got the whole list of all the possibilities of what could be in the future.
Double tap.
And we've got the possibility of zombies. Zombies might be on the list. We've got Scott Kenamore, author of all sorts of zombie books, including his new book that's coming out today. It's called Zombie in Chief, Eater of the Free World. How are you, Scott?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, it's great. It is a great week to be alive.
Well, I'll tell you what, here in the Midwest, it's like air conditioning outside.
Nice.
Is yes. It like we have perfect weather.
Fall is certainly on the horizon, isn't it?
So as all the southern states deal with the heat wave, we're living perfection.
It's great. So Scott, you are an author. You write books. When did you start with this whole adventure of writing books?
Well, let's see. My first book came out in 2007, and it was a humor book called The Zen of Zombie.
Okay.
About how to make your life better by trying to be like a zombie.
A little more brainless.
Yeah. I had a mother who is a social worker therapist type, and whenever I had a problem growing up, I would get like a talk and a self help book. So I grew to have a pretty good familiarity with self help books, and I was like, these things are ridiculous and need to be made fun of with zombies. So that, I think, is still my bestseller of all time.
So is it a self-help book or is it a total parody of self-help books?
Well, sometimes you think it's going to be A and it ends up being B. Like, I get messages from people who are sort of trying out the steps I recommend to be like a zombie. And I tried to do things that wouldn't get you arrested. In terms of prescribing a zombie lifestyle.
Is this a part where we tell Scott that this is an intervention, that his parents have contacted us?
Yeah, seriously. I've heard some strange things over the years from people who've tried to implement it. I irresistibly love zombies. I think they're so they're so cute and good, and you can learn so much from them, and it just seemed natural.
So what is your publishing model? Do you go through a traditional publisher?
Yeah. So my books are pretty much all published by Skyhorse. And Skyhorse recently launched a horror imprint called Talos. So now I say Skyhorse Talos. But Skyhorse was started, I believe, in 2007 by Tony Lyons and Brando Skyhorse. And I think my book, The Zen of Zombie, was the third book they ever bought. So I'm an OG with that company.
Nice.
But they have since grown gangbusters, and they're not publishing has the big five publishers the way they're the big three automakers or used to be in the United States. But Skyhorse is not quite big five, but they're a $40, $50 million company right now. So they're doing okay.
You have a series on zombies.
I do, yes.
That we should talk about because it seems to take place all in the Midwest. We've got Zombie Ohio, Zombie Illinois, and Zombie Indiana.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that series?
Sure. So I've lived all over the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana. We used to live in Michigan. My brother was born in Michigan. Lived in Iowa for a couple of years. I live in Illinois now. I went to college in Ohio. So just I really know the Midwest, and I think a lot of people who live on the coast, they see the Midwest as just identical flyover states. And there's no difference between Iowa and Illinois. And there is, of course, a huge difference if you live here, between Iowa and Illinois. I was interested in writing a series that would explore how these different states would respond in different ways to a crisis. like a zombie outbreak, because I think it's one thing to evaluate a state or a region or a city by like how it acts when like everything is fine and the economy is good and there's no disasters and they're putting its best foot forward. But it's another thing to see how a place reacts maybe when there's like a crisis. And does our best side come out? Does our worst side come out? What do we do? Do we have the infrastructure? Do we know each other? Do we have relationships with each other? All the things that zombies would sort of test, I thought would be fun to explore.
So give us an example of how in Ohio they would react and how it would be different, say, from Illinois.
Sure. Well, so I try to write about what I know firsthand. So Zombie Ohio is set in a fictional version of the place I went to college, Kenyon College. But it's set in Knox County, Ohio, which is really sort of like a rural area. There's lots of Amish, mm-hmm. Lots of farmers. And I think that if there was a zombie outbreak in cities, it would sort of resolve itself very fast. There would be like a lot of violence, a lot of chaos, but it would pass pretty quickly. But I think out in the countryside, where it would sort of be like in medieval times when there was like an outlaw area where just like there's an area that like the laws don't apply because we don't have enough people to police it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what would happen out in a place like Knox County, Ohio. So to the contrary, my second novel in that series, Zombie Illinois, that's set where I used to work on the south side of Chicago. And as opposed to taking place over several months, that book takes place in basically 24 hours. So the setup for Zombie Illinois is that the mayor of Chicago is visiting a graveyard, visiting a cemetery when the zombie outbreak happens. So of course he is eaten by the zombie of Al Capone. So Chicago has no mayor anymore.
Couldn't get much more Chicago than that, Scott.
But the alcohol arrives.
Exactly. So the undead flood the city, and a bunch of aldermen realize, well, when the mayor of Chicago dies, and this is a true thing, the vice mayor takes over. But if we kill the vice mayor, then we get to vote and on who's the next mayor. We can install one of our own guys and have a coup. So while this zombie lawlessness, bloodiness is happening, the aldermen are trying to kill the vice mayor, and my heroes, one of whom is like the vice mayor's daughter, are trying to protect him and like keep the order of law happening in Chicago.
That's a great story.
I'm telling you, this is awesome.
I wish that we had read these before we talked to you. These are books that I am definitely going to go and pick up, because that sounds like a great story. Zombies have been all around us for a long time now in stories. There's a lot of TV shows and movies all about zombies. Are there still more stories to tell about zombies in 2017?
Well, I sure hope so. I feel like they're a newer monster because we didn't really have like the zombie everybody knows until 1968. Like, people forget Bram Stoker wrote Dracula in the 1890s, and there were vampires before that, but they weren't very good, and they didn't have a lot of the things that Stoker came up with, like retractable fangs and floating and turning into animals. So we sort of have the archetype vampire since the 1890s, but we didn't really have zombies until George Romero, who just passed away a couple months ago, or last month, I guess, mm-hmm. comes up with the modern sort of automatically ravenous, reanimated dead body zombie in 1968 with Night of the Living Dead. So I feel like zombies are still sort of percolating, finding their place in the culture. So I think there's a lot more stories to tell, I hope.
You hope, because that's kind of what you hung your writing hat on. Have you written books that don't involve zombies?
Yeah, so I write short stories sometimes, and I write just straight horror. I have a novel called The Grand Hotel, which is a horror novel also published by Skyhorse Talos that came out a couple years ago. But it's interesting as a writer because people don't think about, but there's what you write, and then there's what gets published. So I find that the zombie stories I have written, which are maybe like 40% of the stuff I write when I sit down to write, 100% of that gets published. But when I write just mainstream horror or short stories, it's a much smaller percentage. So you when you look at my you know, works cited page or works page or whatever, it seems as though this guy is obsessed with zombies, and it's about 40% of what I write, but 100% of it gets published, so you see it.
Very interesting. So how many books have you had published so far?
About 10.
Okay. That's great.
That's amazing.
That is a very successful writing career, sir. Well,
you know, done. There's no agreement by writers over sort of like what you should shoot for. So I try to write a book a year because that seems reasonable to me. You write one page every night, just a page. You know, you got a book at the end of the year. And I'll talk to my Manhattan, New York City literary writer friends about that. And they'll be like, whoa, like Kenamore, it's not a race. Like, can a book even be good if you only spend a year on it? And then I'll turn around and talk to my genre writing friends at like the Horror Writers of America annual meeting. And these are guys and gals who write like 2-3 books a year. And they're like, well, if one is the best you can do, you know, don't feel hard on yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. You'll get there one day. And I'm like, all right, so nobody knows. So there's no consensus about how fast to go.
Can you give us an example of things that you're reading that inspire you?
I feel like I read about 50% horror and 50% just like regular fiction, mm-hmm. Or history books. Like right now I'm reading The Rough Riders by Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
Wow. Really interesting stuff. He's a good writer. But yeah, I think there's a lot of horror right now that is being written that's very good, that's very exciting. I feel like a lot of Americans can name a great horror writer, but all of those people are now over 60 years old that they'll name. I think they can name Stephen King, they can name Anne Rice, they can name Clive Barker, they can name Peter Straub. But so what's interesting to me is the group of people who are more in my age cohort, who are a little bit younger than that. And there's so much talent there, you know, like it's hard to start naming people because you don't want to stop. But I think people like obviously Thomas Ligotti is really interesting. I think Laird Barron is incredible. I think Kelly Link, she's incredible. So many good people who are going to be sort of like the next generation that maybe people will be able to name, like they can name Stephen King or Anne Rice in 20 years.
Are they attacking subjects differently than the Stephen Kings and the Anne Rice is there a clear divide as far as how they're approaching the materials?
Man, that's a great question. I almost don't know. Like one sort of spanner in the works, as the British say, is that in the 1990s and prior, horror was selling a lot better than it was now. Horror was almost like the YA of the 90s. Mm-hmm. So you'd walk into, as you guys know, like a Barnes & Noble store, there'd be a horror section. So that changed, and now a lot of horror writing gets packaged by publishers and bookstores as like thrillers or a supernatural thriller, a dark action or a dark novel, but really it's all still just horror. So like knowing where to find the analog for something that was like in Stephen King's cohort back in the 90s when it would have all just been horror. Like Kelly Link, a lot of stuff she does, like she gets collected in like collections of horror, collections of fantastic writing, they'll call it. And then sometimes her collections come out and they're just like mainstream fiction. But I think at heart she's a horror writer. And in the 90s, she definitely would have been packaged that way. In 2017, she's packaged a little different because books sell in a little bit of a different way. But so it's kind of hard to find the analog. But I mean, that's a great question, and I'm dancing around it a little because it's like a really hard question. And I don't know if I'm smart enough to answer it.
Well, school's starting today, so it's time to ask the hard questions. That's for sure.
All right.
So your latest book comes out today. It's available on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. It is called Zombie in Chief, Eater of the Free World. Tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about this book.
Well, I like the idea of a zombie running for president and trying to conceal it. I think that's a funny idea because zombies are just inherently funny to me. Because they're just like the blue collar working class member of the monster world, really. Like they're the opposite of vampires. Like they don't care how they look. They're falling apart. They're not classy. They're not dramatic. They just sort of like up out of the ground and let's get the job done. And so I have this good feeling about them that generates from that approach they take. And I thought, like, so what if one of these guys is running for president? He doesn't want anyone to know. And there's a great, you know, tradition in American writing, back to, you know, Joe Klein's Primary Colors, back to the Manchurian Candidate, of like someone running for president, but they have a secret. And I said, well, why can't that secret be a zombie? Let's make it a zombie this time.
That is a great premise. So where can our listeners find more of your work? Do you have a website?
I do. So just scottkenamore.com is a pretty good website that you might find some cool stuff on.
Awesome. And are you on Twitter and Facebook and all that?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at the Scott Kenamore handle. And if your listeners are in Chicagoland, I'm doing a reading on August 26th. At 7:30 p.m. at Volumes Book Cafe in the super hip Wicker Park.
Oh, I love Volumes Book Cafe. That's actually where we met you. And that is a great spot. That's fantastic that you're going to be there.
Good mojo.
Yeah, and good coffee too. Get yourself a cup of coffee when you're there, Scott.
I'll be all chatty for my reading because I had my coffee.
That is awesome. Scott Kenamore, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Absolutely. And once again, his book, Zombie in Chief, Eater of the Free World, is available today on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll with It section. There's some news going on in the world, and we'll look at some of the stories in the world this week. Biohackers. Okay, let me scare you a little bit. The idea of DNA can be encoded with malware came up this week. A University of Washington group used DNA to make programs that might affect other things.
Now, you could think of that positively in the sense that you and your magic fingers all of a sudden can control computers or whatever you can do it.
Which I look forward to.
But we also, it says that they could be malicious.
Well, a program can do whatever the programmer tells it to do. And if you don't trust the programmer, you don't know what that program's going to do.
So there you go. There's your scary part. So if the end of the world doesn't happen today, there's your new scary story.
We got at least another 6 days, right? We got till Monday. Don't worry about it. The Walt Disney Company announced this week that they will be creating their own streaming service in 2019 when their agreement with Netflix expires. Netflix is trying to hold on as hard as they can to all those Disney movies, Marvel movies, and Star Wars movies that they have contractually right now streaming on Netflix.
All right, so I'll give you some background on this. The Marvel and Star Wars may remain on Netflix. They're continuously negotiating that. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at ESPN and we're looking at the Disney properties proper. In addition to that, Disney has gone out there and they've purchased control over the Major League Baseball software used for streaming.
BAM Media, yeah.
Which is, they had been a big investor in that, and now they've taken control. BAM is the best streaming software that's out there right now. Interesting enough, created by Major League Baseball.
Yeah, because Major League Baseball has so much footage that they need to get out there, they had to find a way to do it, and they did it right, and Disney came calling, which is great. Alexa is helping people around the world, and one of the things it's helping with is speech.
All right, so this is a gentleman, this is a blog post that he put together. He was talking about how Alexa helped his daughter who has a speech impediment. And because of Alexa's not the parent sitting in front of you, if you have a child that has struggling at pronouncing words, or you're an adult like me who has trouble pronouncing words. Did I say nuclear? All right, so thank God for editing and Steve's help.
That's right.
Well, anyway, his daughter has a speech impediment. Alexa will not understand speech impediments. And so she had to work to get Alexa to understand her.
Wow.
And because it was a game, because you're not looking at mom and dad with the looks of judgment. Not mom and not that mom and dad are looking at you with judgment, but
still.
Yeah. We're humans.
There. Yeah.
But Alexa just listens. She's non-judgmental.
Yeah.
And when you say something she understands, she responds.
Right.
So if you're not familiar with Alexa, it's the Amazon's voice-activated software that you...
Which we just activated in your house like 5 times by saying the key word. Yeah.
Anyway, I think this is just a fascinating sort of byproduct of these services.
AI is coming. It's coming. It's going to be here. And AI can do some wonderful things, even some things that we didn't think about.
I'm going to leave it at this. My daughter doesn't have perfect pronunciation, but it's much better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the shame of working on pronunciation with parental approval is gone. My daughter doesn't distinguish speech practice from playtime.
Nice.
And there you go. That is such a sweet, sweet story.
Now, if you could get Siri to understand you, you'd be so much better off.
Well, that would require Apple to actually put some effort into this.
It's a great story. You know, we've got such a great week in front of us. School's starting, and next Monday, we've got the big solar eclipse. This has been in the news for weeks now. Everyone's real excited about it. Hotels are booked along the band.
Steve, are they going to turn out the sun?
Yeah, they're going to turn out the sun. Birds are going to go to sleep. The stars are going to come out, and it's going to be a huge celestial event next Monday.
All right, so one of my favorite... All right, if you've been following our Facebook or Twitter feed, I've been posting, or I'm sorry, our staff has been diligently posting different stories about the eclipse.
Uh-huh.
And one of my favorites was from a TED Talk. It was from an NPR science reporter who he studied science in college. And anyway, he talks about why you want to go see this. So you're in the Chicago area. If you're in the Chicago area, you're about 6 hours from seeing this.
From the ultimate place. I mean, you can see it just fine in Chicago. It's just you're not going to see the same view.
You're not going to see a 99.9% eclipse. You're going to see a partial eclipse.
Right.
And while that's certainly better than nothing, this is not what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of going down to Southern Illinois...
St. Louis.
St. Louis, Southern Illinois, Kentucky, wherever.
Same thing.
Whatever the path ends up coming near you. The idea is, he goes, the moon comes up, will get between you and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, for those 2 minutes, the sky opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind that is that you will realize your place in the universe.
Uh-huh.
And recognize just, you are just a piece of dust on the beach. I mean,
But everything, the whole universe absolutely goes around me.
Oh, of course it does, Steve. I wasn't trying to...
I'm the insignificant center of the entire universe.
I wasn't trying to insinuate anything else, Steve. That's of course. When he saw his first one, he goes, I became an eclipse chaser.
Nice.
Since that point. And it really is. Those 2 minutes last a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a procedure. So there's a couple things we want you to know. And one, you want to prove glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So 7-Eleven's got them. There are a number of places. Many places are selling out.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want... You want to prove glasses because you will burn your eyes.
Right.
You do not want to do that. But the other part is there are plenty of things you can do online that can show you how to make some stuff
mm-hmm.
that you can see. Maybe you can't look directly at it.
Try to find some floppy disks.
And the glasses are like 3D glasses. I mean, but mm-hmm. they're really, really dark.
Right.
There is a seal on them that tells you that they're real...
ISO certified, yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, you're going to want to put them on for, you know, a half hour or so before these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
The event takes place over a couple hours, but the total eclipse is only for a few minutes. Only for a couple minutes.
But the total eclipse of the heart goes on and on.
Well, turn around, bright eyes.
It's going to be so exciting.
All right, so if you cannot get down to a place that the eclipse is, and if you go to our notes, you can look, you can click through, you can see the path that this eclipse goes through.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, from the Chicago area, you're looking at about 6 hours. That's certainly drivable.
It's totally worth it.
Okay. But if you can't, you know, there are events going on in the Chicagoland area.
Planetarium. Adler Planetarium is having quite an event going on.
Even our local school system, Steve works in, they sent out an email.
Sure.
I have no idea what they're going to do with these. How are they going to tell kids not to look up?
Look at the sun, kids.
Don't you look there. Don't you look there. Oh, my goodness. I looked. I can't see now.
And at the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., they're having quite an event for this.
All right. So
if you're in D.C., go there.
All right. So if you miss this one, which I would highly suggest you not miss this, this is truly one of nature's phenomenons, truly special.
Mm-hmm.
The next one that will be close enough to us will be 2024.
That's not too far away, 2024.
And it's a different path, but it will cross near us roughly the same spot.
Yeah.
So this one goes across the United States, eventually ends up in like Charleston, South Carolina. But the next one in 2024, I mean, it kind of goes across Southern Illinois and will pop through like Columbus, Ohio and going on up.
Mm-hmm.
These don't happen very often, and I would never say skip school, but I'm telling you, there's at some point you have to recognize that this is so unique that maybe you want to go do it.
Yeah, I won't be in school on Monday. Sorry, kids. This is a significant moment, and it's significant enough for me to take my family to go and see this. So I suggest that everybody else does that as well.
Yeah.
We'll shut down some stuff. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive the eclipse and all of the other things and survive another week. What do you think?
Steve, I don't know. This could be our final show.
This might be it.
They're going to turn out the sun, Steve.
Hopefully it'll just boot right back up after they turn it out, and it'll be fine.
I think they're changing the butane filter or something. I don't know.
It's a maintenance schedule. That's what it is. We've figured it out. We're solving the world's problems.
I told all the little kids I was going to turn out the sun for a little bit of time.
I'm glad you're not a preschool teacher. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. I'll be taking some interesting pictures this week. I'm sure that you'll get to those. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. Go and give us a 5-star rating that helps us out. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am Horace on my chariot. Riding across the sky.
See you in the future.